Welcome to Strategy Talk, where the editors and writers at strategypage.com discuss news as history and give you a unique view of the events around the world. I'm Dan Masterson, publisher of strategypage.com, and your host. We'll be talking to Jim Dunnigan, well-known military analyst, author, and editor of strategypage.com. Also, we'll be chatting with Austin Bay, author, columnist, and blogger. His blog can be found at austinbay.net. Jim and Austin are working on the fourth edition of A Quick and Dirty Guide to War that will be published shortly. So, Jim and Austin, we've written a lot about on the site about field expediency over in Iraq. It's something that U.S. soldiers have been known for a long time, and they like tech. I mean, you talk to some of the old-timers about World War II, and those guys would load themselves up with so much equipment. But there was a lot of field expediency going on in that war, too, where such as the hedgerow cutters and like that. What sort of things have the troops been doing in Iraq as far as field expediency?
Well, you notice that it has been a long tradition. The big thing that was always mentioned about World War II was that was the first generation of American soldiers that had grown up with automobiles. Automobiles were fairly recent, having only become widespread about 30 years before World War II started. And that was a big advantage for the American troops because you could always find somebody who could fix a truck or a tank. Now, here we are 60 years later, and it really hasn't changed, but the new tech nowadays is computers and electronic gadgets of all sorts. The other big thing that influenced the field expedience in Iraq and Afghanistan was the Internet. That is the unheralded hero of the war over there. The troops got a hold of the Internet, and all of a sudden, they were in touch with other soldiers. And the opinion leaders, you know, the guys are always mouthing off and talking to other people, spread the word about any new bit of gear that the troops had come around. Now, this brings up another, area that most civilians are unaware of, but soldiers, as always professional soldiers, and all American soldiers have been, volunteers since the 1970s, will spend their own money on better equipment, in some cases even better weapons. Now, again, this goes back a long way. In World War II, there were cases of a guy riding home saying, hey, Ma, could you send me that pistol, Dad had from World War I? I might be able to use it. And in the 21st century, the troops were basically buying better, sleeping bags, better, for example, the athletic underwear, the stuff with the wicks, that keeps you cooler in very hot weather. And in doing that, they forced the army, to make a lot of that stuff official issue. But there was really no limits to, the experiments the troops would undertake, by themselves. This was a combat zone, more than one soldier was turned to an officer or sergeant busting his chops about trying out some new gear, and he said, what are you going to do, something to the combat zone? You get pretty fearless in there and pretty desperate for anything that'll give you an edge in combat. And given the fact that the casualty rate in Iraq is one-third of what it was in Vietnam, they were doing a lot of things right. And indeed, so many of the gadgets that the troops picked up by themselves and spread through the internet, their internet contacts, got adopted by the army, and then the army also adopted around the time, I think it was 2003, the Rapid Initiative, Rapid Fielding Initiative program, where basically units were given mad money to spend it any way you want, that'll help you. And this is basically adopting a policy that the special forces had since the beginning, since World War II, when OSS, the black budget. The army felt it could trust its, brigade and division commanders, to take a million up to a couple million dollars and spend it wisely. And indeed they did. And again, this was the source of a lot of equipment that basically became official issue. You must have seen a lot of that when you were over there, Austin.
Well, I was going to try to avoid telling a personal story, but I think I will.
You were there.
March of 2004, I gave a talk to a military group in Central Texas, and when I finished it, everybody knew I was going back on active duty and heading for Iraq. The person who announced it said I was, and then about after I finished the talk, which, as I recall, it was about it was actually about weapon systems. I think one of the things I was talking about is all the questions I got afterwards. Well, Colonel Bay, what are you going to be doing? You know, and that. So I guess I should have talked more about what at least I thought I was going to be doing. But one of the fellows in the back caught me afterwards, and he says, "I'm a reservist in the reserve special forces outfit." I think he said he drilled in Alabama. I believe that's where he was drilling. But he says, "I'm kind of on leave from that right now, but I've got a bunch of things you need to know from all my friends that have been in Iraq and Afghanistan." And he says, one of the things you need to do, and it's going to sound like an ad for Under Armour, but this is what he says. He says, "Sir, here's my email. I'm going to send you a list of some of the things that the guys recommend, but you're going to want some of that." Rapid.
Yeah, we've published one or two of those sure. things you need sure. to take with you lists.
Right, and I put that, I had one of these up on my website, actually. I wrote one when I got back. So he gave me a pretty good information dump. I'd also gone up to Fort Hood and talked to, one of the supply sergeants, Third Corps, headquarters about it. And then interesting enough, the supply sergeant said, "Now, wait a minute, sir, before you go and buy a lot of stuff, I'm going to tell you we used some unit money. The first sergeant and the sergeant major had decided how we were going to put together a deployment package out of unit money. Now, some of this is, as Jim says, is kind of mad money, but the units also have money you can throw for a barbecue, or you can use it to take care of an emergency situation or the like." And he says, We've got a package of some things, so, you know, kind of take it easy." And I said, "Well, I'm going to definitely go buy myself a pair of tactical gloves," because I'd had five or six different vets tell me, "Get yourself a good pair of tactical gloves with the that you can use to keep your hands off of the protect your hands from the heat in the summer." So here's this list that is operating. It's one of the things that everybody knows. And I bought the clothes. I bought some Under Armour shirts and shorts and tactical gloves. And then I went on active duty. I'm up at Hood getting spun up. And the supply sergeant says, "Look, here's what you're going to get that we got out of this, out of the what the headquarters non-coms decided to purchase with some of the unit money." And it included a non-issue but very, very useful holster that fit below your body armor. And it was something I could have gone and bought for $35, but they had bought it with the unit money because the troops said, "We got a lot of guys with sidearms, and this is what we're going to spend our budget on." And you got in this a Camelback canteen.
Oh, yes.
And I had just gone and bought myself a Camelback, but the one that we got out of the unit group was better than the one that I bought. And so I gave the other one I had to someone else. But here's an example of what Jim says. You know, the folks know, the soldiers know what's better, even with some of the money that the soldiers have some say over in unit funds. They decided to spend a little bit of money on getting a Camelback canteen because it could ride on top of your armor and you wouldn't have to carry a regular canteen, and you can hydrate as you're walking which is the use of the Camelback canteen.
Now the Camelback
canteen. In the last 8 years, I did a little research on why, you know, trying to find out why all this activity is going on. And one of the contributing reasons was there's been an enormous increase in the number of new products in the outdoor and camping category in the last 30 years. We take it for granted because those of us who lived through it, you know, it just gradually happened. But I went, again, using the internet and got data on, you know, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s. There's a lot more stuff out there.
Well, let's move forward to the Rapid Fielding Initiative. The Rapid Fielding Initiative hit Iraq, I want to say, in late June or July of 2004. And here are some of the items that troops have been buying. There were, you got an issue of some of the light Polartec undergarments for cold weather. Again, they weren't particularly expensive, but the troops had been telling their spouses and their parents and their friends, this is better than the thicker, older material that's military issue. Nobody wants to have extra weight, particularly if you're operating in Afghanistan.
Yeah, I've used that for running for years. It's great stuff.
And right, exactly. And it's the thing is, I talked to one of the contractors. He was actually retired Army Master Sergeant, an E-8, but he was part of the group that was doing the issue of it. And he says, you know, this stuff is so much better. And actually, as I don't have the facts on how much it was costing, but apparently. It was fast tracking the money for it. The government got a very good, very, very good price on some of these items. Now, one of the other things that they got is that a lot of the troops had started buying. Here's another product type, but they liked the Danner boot better than some of the other boots that were being issued. So. You had an option there of choosing this heavier Danner boot that was, of course, it made little difference in the summer in Iraq, but it was one that had better characteristics in the cold and in the wet. And
they had a big problem with that in Afghanistan, where they had to go and get a civilian
right.
boot because none of the U.S. boots were made for the sharp rocks they
that's
encountered
right.
in those hills, and the issue boots would
that's
come
right.
apart in a few months.
So, but you see what's happening here is the acceleration is the military government, Congress is actually under pressure from troops buying being pressured because of the facts that the troops are buying certain kinds of these items, and they're saying, okay, if that's what it takes to do the job right, then there's a morale component in it as well as the troop welfare issue. There is one thing that I thought was very interesting is that the Army issued a different kind of fast wicking T-shirt, and they're really very, very high quality. Because, and again, my source on this was the retired non-coms doing the issue, and then I went and checked this out with one of the med guys afterwards. He says, well, the problem with some of the Under Armour type, or at least the first generation Under Armour type T-shirts, is if you get a burn, the material because the nylon stretch in it sticks into the
yeah,
burn.
Yeah, we covered that several times over the years. The interesting angle on that was the Marines were the ones who banned any of the polyethylene, whatever it was, you know,
mm-hmm.
the synthetic self-wicking, you know, underwear. The Army, after a while, did not. And the reason was when the Marines and Army officers came together and this was raised, the Army guy pointed out, they did a little research, and they found out that there was never any case of anybody being burned like that. And he pointed out, he says, look, he says, you got to remember, this is underwear. It's next to the skin. Yeah, if it gets on fire, it's going to get burned. But on top of it is the BDUs and the armor. And if the fire is going to burn through that, the guy is not a wounded soldier, he's a dead soldier. So
well,
what difference does it make?
Jim, the thing is that I'm actually going to praise the RFI guys on this. Those T-shirts were excellent T-shirts.
Yes, exactly. And that's why the soldiers were making a lot of noise on the net when there was talk about, like, the Marines, you know, banning them. And the Marines, of course, you know, their brass didn't like the idea of doing anything sensible that the Army had, you know, come up with. So I don't know if it's still the case, but I know for months I was getting, you know, nasty letters passed on to me from Marines moaning and groaning about, you know, how come the Army, you know, is smart enough to figure this out and our officers are not, but we better not go there.
You know, one of the interesting things is the care packages that have been sent over there. I know my family's been involved in some of that, where some of the items are really interesting, such as the soldiers want baby wipes because
yes.
they can clean
oh, yes.
off better with those. And
well, I mean, you can't bathe for a couple of weeks on end. The closest thing you're going to get to a shower is a baby wipe.
And then the other big thing is Crystal Light so that they can pour it into their water and mix it up so that their water tastes like something.
Yes.
So.
Yes, the foul-tasting water has always been a big complaint. That's why we did a bit recently about the new water purification device, which uses, you know, high-tech filters. And he basically poured dirty water in and squeezed it, you know, pulled some plunger out and squeezed it, and it basically squeezed it through. And the beauty of this thing, the reason why the British actually buy this for their troops in issue in Afghanistan, our guys still got to buy the damn thing. It costs, I think, $300 a pop. It's about the size of a large thermos. The water it produces doesn't taste crappy. It tastes like tap water. And that's a big thing over there where if you're out in the bush and you got to use various, you know, other, you know, either pills or other filtration, older filtration devices, it's a big deal for a GI to get, you know, normal tasting water. And the people back home kind of miss that, you know, but you got to be there. And that's why the internet's so important, because that word gets out and back real quick. Otherwise, a lot of the, you know, in the old days, it might go for 5-10 years before an item that the troops are buying out of their own pocket, you know, gets around and gets up to the point where the media even picks up on it. But now the media, a lot of journalists know enough to troll certain websites, or get on listservs, you know, that belong to the troops, and get these items, and they think it's hot enough, they'll jump on it, and bingo, instant results. Because if there's one thing the Army hates above all else is bad publicity.
Right. Now, the interesting
thing
that
we... Let me add one other thing. You're talking about the quick handy wipe type devices. Something else that I certainly saw is that the small bottles of hand sanitizer seem to be extremely popular, but it serves the same kind of purpose. It's a quick way to clean up. So.
Right. And it's the best way to get the sand off, isn't that right?
Yeah. Sand is a big issue over there. And that's another thing that baby wipes use for. It's one of the few things that can really clean out the sand. And they use that stuff for cleaning their equipment and weapons as well.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.